Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Let's pick up the story of Jacob in Genesis chapter 31. You know the story so far. Jacob got himself in trouble with Dad by tricking Dad into giving him the blessing. Of course, Mom prompted Jacob to do this. And this caused Esau to be so incensed that he began saying that he was going to kill Jacob after Dad died, because that's kind of what they were expecting would happen soon, is that Dad would pass. Well, at Mom's prompting, Dad sends Jacob up to Padan Aram, up to Haran, to find a cousin to marry. And he sends him with nothing other than the clothes on his back, the stick in his hand, and the sandals on his feet, maybe a bag of supplies. So Jacob has to work 7 years to pay the dowry, a very high dowry, by the way, hundreds of thousands of dollars of value, for his beloved wife, Rachel. But at the last moment, he gets tricked into taking the older sister and Leah, and then he finds himself over a barrel where he has to do another 7 years of work in order to marry her like he wanted. And then for the next 7 years after that, it's a baby contest between the two sisters. And they even drag their servant girls into this, making them do surrogacy with Jacob. And at the end of Jacob's 14 years in Haran, he has four women that he's supporting, and 11 boys, and one daughter. All these kids are six and under, and he still has nothing. He has zip. Only the clothes on everybody's backs and the stick in his hand and the sandals on everybody's feet. That's it. So Laban convinces him to stick around and work for another 6 years. And so he does. But the work contract this time is worked out by Jacob in such a way that he will be able to build up his wealth. And he does. At the end of the 6 years, Jacob has a lot more animals in his possession than Laban does anymore. And they're very strong and healthy specimens. And he has even sold some of his excess animals used the proceeds to hire servants to work at his tent city, which is growing, and to work his flocks and herds, presumably, because he's diversifying. He's expanding out. He's buying camels and starting to breed them. He's buying donkeys and starting to breed them. He seems to also be buying cattle in order to breed them as well. And so 6 years later, he is really well-positioned wealth-wise. But his father-in-law and his brothers-in-law are not happy campers. Genesis 31:1. Now, Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth. It's not fair. He has stolen it from Dad and stealing it from us because we're the heirs of Dad." So when Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before, the Lord then said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred. I'll be with you." Now again, Mom has not messaged him to say, "Come home, it's safe." Because the whole agreement was he would stay away until Dad died, and then Esau got over his anger at not being the heir of the two-thirds of Jacob's property, or of Yitzhak's property. And so that hasn't happened. Yitzhak is still alive and kicking. And Esau hasn't had a chance to really come face-to-face with the fact that Jacob cheated him and is going to get two-thirds of the property. So Jacob presumably would have just kept working for Laban until Mom messaged him to come home. But now he's feeling kind of upset that his brothers-in-law, for sure, are really mad, and his father-in-law is mad. And so he's wrestling with this, and that's when God steps in and says, no, you need to leave. I'll take care of everything. You just go. Verse number 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was. Now, I'm going to make some suppositions here, and that's all they are. It's just me guessing, trying to work the logistics. We know where Haran is. Haran is part of the drainage basin of the Balik River that dumps into the Euphrates, not very far from the big curve where it heads north. And you can see this easily on a map. And so that's where Laban is centered out of, is Haran. I'm thinking that Jacob, as he began to make his plans here, started running all of his sheep and things south of Haran a little ways. Kind of like how in baseball, the runner will sometimes take a lead off of a base, hoping that they'll be able to have a head start during the next hit. Well, that's, I think what Jacob is doing is he's getting that head start lead. And so he calls Rachel and Leah, his two wives, to himself and says, this is what I need you to know. He said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before. So I can tell your dad is getting madder and madder at me. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know, you too know that I have served your father with all my strength. So he has not cheated Laban in any way. He's given him hard day's work. And yet, your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. You know that your dad has not been fair to me like I've been fair to him. In fact, he keeps changing the arrangement, and specifically this way. God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages. So apparently each year, maybe, you know, as breeding season approached, Laban would say, you know what? There's not been a fair distribution of the babies here. You keep getting a lot more than I get. I think we need to change it to you get the spotted babies. And so Jacob says, if he said the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, no, it's going to be the stripe. The stripe will be your wages. Then all the flock bore striped. And thus, God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. So he says, God's been on my side. God's the one that's been transferring the wealth from your dad to our family. Verse 10, this was the important part I mentioned before. In the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats that mated with the flock were spotted or striped, spotted and mottled. Then the angel of God, the messenger of God, said to me in a dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. So God was communicating to Jacob during this six-year period, helping him in the breeding process, which is why I believe Jacob was told to do the things he did with those branches as part of a faithful practice. It was something that he could do to put action to the faith that was in his heart. Verse 13, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. So God identifies himself beyond a shadow of any doubt to Jacob. He says, do you remember that night you spent near the city of Luz? You slept on that rock and you saw me at the head of the stairs with the angels going back and forth. And I told you that I was going to bless you and protect you, and you made a vow to me that day. Well, it's time for you to head home in fulfillment of my vow to you. Arise, go out from this land and return to the land of your kindred. So Jacob shares the supernatural with his two wives, shares a God story. And this is their response. And by the way, we need to mention this. Neither one of them, and neither one of their handmaidens or their surrogate servants, have gotten pregnant or had any more children. It's been 6 years, no new babies. So that means that Jacob and these ladies still have 11 boys and one girl, but now they're between the ages of 6 and 12. So Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has indeed devoured our money. Now that is an important indictment by these two women. The way that it was supposed to work is that when the dowry was paid by the man or the man's family to the family of the woman, that family was to keep that money on account or safely secured for the woman. It was basically alimony in advance if he ended up not treating her right and they ended up getting divorced and she needed money once she got home to take care of herself and her kids. So mom and dad were supposed to keep that money safe. Or it could be life insurance, as in husband dies, she ends up going home to mom and dad, and she takes the kids with her. And so that money then is used to support her and her family without dad around. Eventually, that money should have been passed as a sort of inheritance to the daughter once dad, because dad was the money manager in the family, you would say, once dad had gotten too old or something. And so it was basically a trust fund. It was a dowry trust fund. Well, since Jacob did manual labor for Laban, Laban should have set aside an equivalent amount of silver that he was not paying Jacob for his services. And all of that should have been in a trust fund for both Leah and Rachel. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of buying power here. But Rachel and Leah say, he didn't do that. He just spent it. He spent our dowry. He's eaten it up. We've got nothing. So they're not happy with dad. They're saying, basically, he treated us like slaves. He just sold us. Like we're not even related to him. So they're mad. Verse 15. All the wealth that God has taken away from our father now belongs to us and to our children. So that's where their acknowledgement is even though dad has been trying to cheat you, and he definitely cheated us, God turned around and transferred dad's wealth into our family. It now belongs to us and our kids. And then the final thing they say, now then, whatever God has said to you, you just do it. If God said it's time to leave, we're ready to do that. We're on board with this. So I get the impression that the two sisters have gotten past their bickering and their fighting, and they've now kind of become a team that are ready to raise these kids and be part of a very wealthy family group. So, verse 17, Jacob arose, and he set his sons and his wives on camels. Remember, he's raising those now. So he puts them on animals, and he drove away all of his livestock, all his property that he'd gained, the livestock in his possession that he had acquired in Paddan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Yitzhak. So he makes the arrangements to strike his tent city. You know, pick up all the tents. Remember, he's got servants that take care of this stuff now. To strike all the tents, get them packed up, put on pack animals, get his family up and on the pack camels, and he's going to take off and start heading south as fast as he can go. And his servants are going to be moving the animals along as fast as they can go as well. Now, he's picked a very specific time to do this. Verse 19, Laban had gone to shear his sheep. Now, sheep shearing time comes, I think, in the early summer. And it's a very big celebration time. And so Laban and his boys are the ones that take care of their animals. Remember the solid colored sheep and goats. So they're staying away from Jacob and his animals. They're doing their stuff somewhere probably away from Haran, maybe to the north side of Haran. And so everybody's doing their own thing. And so Jacob figures this is a good time. He'll be distracted, paying attention to that. He'll be partying down with his sheep shearing people and the sheep contests that they'll have every day, and he'll be drinking and eating plenty and getting good night's sleep. So he'll be distracted with the party and the work of sheep shearing time. I'm going to take off. Now something else happens though. Okay, read again, verse 19. Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole his household gods, his teraphim, these little clay figurines that represent gods and goddesses or spirits of the household or the region. A lot of cultures have these household gods represented by little figurines that they keep sometimes around the fireplace of the house. And so they would pray to them and give food offerings to them, and apparently Laban would use his to kind of ask spirits, you know, familiar spirits, what do I need to know? That this is how he taps into the spirit world. So it's an occult practice to have these things. And so Rachel stole her father's little figurines. Now, why did she do it? Well, some commentators will say because they are indicators of inheritance. And I'm like, what? I don't remember reading that anywhere in any type of original documentation. Besides that, she's a daughter that's married outside of the family, And so the inheritance line wouldn't come to her regardless of whether she had these things. So that just does not make any sense, I think. The other thing that some people suggest is, well, they're expensive. They're items of value. Well, as far as I can tell, these are made of clay. And they have religious purposes. They don't really have value purposes. They're not like gold and silver idols. So I don't think that makes much sense either. I think it all ties back to something that I told you to file away for right now. And that is that Laban uses divination to tap into the spirit world, to find things out. And so I think Rachel was thinking, wow, we need to stop him from communicating to his little godlings. We need to stop him from communicating into the spirit world. So I'll just steal his little teraphim, his little figurines, so he can't do that. And so off they go. Jacob tricked Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he intended to flee. He fled with all that he had and arose and crossed the Euphrates. The Euphrates is a couple of days' travel south from Haran. And once you cross the Euphrates, then you're on this fairly well-traveled path that's sometimes referred to as the Royal Road or the King's Highway. And it heads down toward Canaan. And so he gets on this road, and he is moving. In order to complete the travel that we know he completes here in the time that he does, he has got to be making 30 miles a day, something like that. That's a pretty heavy travel schedule, especially when you're herding animals, when you're pushing animals. You're basically running these animals at times. And, you know, you can do that. We've all seen movies where they're running the cattle to market because they're trying to get them there on time. But it's not good for the animals to do that. But remember, Jacob is concerned that his father-in-law is going to try to stop him from going. So the farther away he can get, the less likely it is that Laban can catch him. So he fled with all that he had and arose and crossed the Euphrates and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. Now, that's not what it was called at this time. It's going to get a name because of this story, and it'll be the name of Gilead. But Gilead is basically the region to the east and southeast of the Sea of Galilee, that region right there. Verse 22, when it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. So Jacob's been on the road for 3 days, so he may be close to 100 miles away. He, Laban, took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days. So it takes a total of 10 days for Laban to close on Jacob's position. And so we know that he is in Gilead when this happens, and so that's what gives us this understanding that he has been pushing a good 30 miles a day in order to get it done. And I told you it takes about 2 weeks to walk this trip. And so here we are 11 days by the time they meet into the trip. He took his kinsman, pursued him for 7 days, followed close after him into the hill country of Gilead. But God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream by night. So Laban can see well ahead of him a big group moving. How? Well, dust cloud on the horizon, because a big group of people moving along with animals and stuff, they're going to raise a dust cloud. So Laban can see that he's closing in on Jacob, and it's night, it's getting on toward evening, and so Everybody stops for the evening and gets a good night's sleep. Well, Laban doesn't get a good night's sleep because the God of Dira, the God of Abraham and Nahor, the God of Yitzhak and of Bethuel, the God of Jacob, comes to Laban in a dream and says to him, you be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. So basically, you need to behave yourself when you catch up with Jacob and start talking to him. So the next morning, verse 25, that next day, Laban overtook Jacob. So he catches up with him fully. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen pitched tents in the hill country of Gilead. So apparently he catches up with him before the end of that 11th day of travel, and they both set up their little encampments for the night. They're not probably the full-fledged encampments of a tent city, but a traveling encampment. And then they have a conference. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword? So, what did you do? Why are you acting like you are a conqueror that has stolen away my daughters and my grandkids and all this property? Why are you acting like a criminal that has to slink away and rush away from my presence? Why did you secretly flee and trick me and didn't tell me? And so that's where we will pick up the story the next time we have opportunity to get into God's inspired word.